With tweets like this, you'll retire before me. Hashtag fake news.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. You should also go and follow Basketball Monster at Bask Monster, and of course the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net, so you know when the new episode of your favorite team show is available. What we're going to talk about today, we're going to look back at Sunday's action. We're going to preview Monday's action. We're going to preview the week ahead for weekly and daily changes, seasonal leagues. We're going to recap the teams that played across the weekend. We're going to shine the player spotlight on Rajon Rondo of the New Orleans Pelicans. So there's lots for us to talk about.
Let's get to it.
Michael Bolton is absolutely spot on. Let's start by looking at the week ahead in the NBA. It is week 16. We're closing in on the trade deadline, which is the 8th of February. So not this week, the week after, and then the All-Star break after that. We are 60% of the way through the NBA season, even more through the standard fantasy season, with just on 2 months to go in majority of leagues. For week 16, it's a really interesting week in terms of streaming ability. There's a possibility you could stream every single day of this week. Now, normally when I talk about days where you can stream, it's 8 games and less. The most games we've got this week on any day is 9. So there is a possibility with some of you that you will be able to field or have open roster spots on every day this week, meaning utilizing your acquisitions for the week is vitally important. You can check all out how the week looks ahead on Basketball Monster with our schedule analyzer and read Matt Smith's article over there about the week ahead. I'm going to assume that on those 9 game days, which is Tuesday and Saturday, it is going to be a little bit harder for you to stream. So we're trying to work out a streaming strategy on the other days. But for the week ahead, on Monday, we've got 6 games, a pretty light Monday happening. Tuesday, we've got 9. Wednesday, we've got 8. Thursday, we have 5. Friday, 9. Saturday 9 and Sunday 6. So your potential to stream every day, but maybe Tuesday, Friday, Saturday are the days that you may not be able to get someone in to your active lineups, which would necessitate you understanding how to best use your streams for the week. So if we're going to focus on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday as the ideal streaming days, not normally you get those days as your ideal streaming days, especially Monday and Wednesday, but it is, as I said, a little bit of a different week. To start the week on that pseudo back-to-back Monday, Wednesday, there's a bunch of teams that play that those 2 days. It's Charlotte, Indiana, Boston, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Memphis, Miami, Phoenix, and Dallas play across that Monday, Wednesday pseudo back-to-back. So there's any number of players you can stream in. You can look at guys like Marcus Morris in Boston. You can look at Lance Stevenson for Indiana. You could look at The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, Ersan Ilyasova in Atlanta. You could grab a guy like Timote Luwawu-Cabarro in Philadelphia. You could grab anyone in Memphis, Dylan Brooks, Mike Henry, Ivan Rabb for deeper leagues, Jarrell Martin perhaps, Miami Tyler Johnson if he hasn't been owned, Justice Winslow, Bam Adebayo, plenty of options across that pseudo back-to-back. But when you get to Wednesday, Thursday, there's only one team that's got that back-to-back, and that's the Grizzlies. And as you'll notice, adding a Grizzlies guy at the start of the week on Monday, you can play them Monday, you can play them Wednesday, you can play them Thursday, and you can also play them Sunday. So all 4 of the Grizzlies games this week fall on those low scheduled days. Now, it's a pity that most of those guys are shit, so that maybe they're not going to have huge value, but adding one Grizzly guy, maybe it is Jarrell Martin, who should see decent value, but it could get cut into if Jermichael Green returns. Maybe it's Mario Chalmers. Maybe it's Andy Harrison. Maybe it is Wayne Seldon Jr. or Dylan Brooks. You can actually utilize those guys on all 4 games that they play, which might be more beneficial. But again, this week's a little bit weird, and you might be able to utilize everyone every day of the week, depending on how your roster is structured. To end the week, That Thursday, Sunday pseudo back to back, you've got the Thunder, the Bucks, the Grizzlies, and the Raptors. But again, that might be not important to you because you might be able to have that roster spot on Friday or on Saturday where there are only 9 games. So quite a weird week. Make sure you are utilizing your back to backs and setting out a streaming strategy for the week. And then when it gets to the end of the week, you're focusing more in on who's going to win you those categories that you need to get back, or which guys you can get in to defend the categories. If you've got a lead in those areas, say threes are really tight, then you look for guys who can help you with your limited acquisitions just to get threes to really, you know, solidify that category. All right, if we're going to have a look, and of course we are, at the week ahead for weekly leagues, how that's all going to pan out. As I said earlier, we've got a bunch of teams looking and playing 4 games. In fact, the majority of teams play 4 games this week. So a lot of your decisions might be, do I play a stud from a 3-game team versus a not-so-stud from a 4-game team? The teams that do play 4 games this week, we've got the Thunder, the Hornets, the Knicks, the Bucks, the Nets, the Pacers, the Celtics, Hawks, Sixers, Wolves, Grizzlies, Heat, Raptors, Blazers, Nuggets, and Suns. You've got 2 teams that have 2 games, and that's the Clippers and the Bulls. You'd look at Lou Williams as a player that you could start there for the Clippers, but yeah, Blake Griffin maybe, DeAndre Jordan perhaps, no one on the Bulls you'd be looking to start, and even those Clippers guys would be a little bit doubtful in that situation. And the rest of the teams all play 3 games. The Magic, the Lakers, the Pelicans, the Mavericks, the Wizards, the Rockets, the Spurs, the Kings, the Warriors, the Cavs, the Jazz, and the Pistons all play 3 games this week. Now, someone like the Suns, they have 4 games, but they're pretty tough games. The Grizzlies, the Mavericks, the Jazz, and the Hornets all, that's who they play this week for their 4 games during the week, and there's some low-tempo, tough defenses to go up against. So borderline players like Alex Len or maybe even Marquise Chris, it might not be as advantageous to play those versus a 3-game guy like an Evan Fournier or a Bismack Biyombo from Orlando, who's got the matchups against the Lakers, which is a great one, the Rockets up pace, and against the Wizards, which is middle of the road. So those decisions need to be made, of course, when you're setting your weekly lineups. Go and check everything over on Basketball Monster. You can check the ease of the opponents that's tailored to your punch strategy and to your league settings. And you can have a look as to which players might be available on the wire that suits you this week and how to really go about setting that weekly lineup, which is what you've got to do at this point of the week, of course. All right, let's now look at the teams that we're not going to really cover too much in today's show because they don't play Sunday and they don't play on Monday. We'll start with the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets' last game over the weekend, they were without Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Caris LeVert, and D'Angelo Russell. So we saw both Sauce Castillo, Nick Stauskas, and Jahlil Okafor put up huge games. Okafor scored 21 points, but it's mainly because Quincy Acey started at power forward, so a lot more minutes opened up at center for Jahlil, and he was able to play over 20 minutes and score over 20 points. This is not the indication to me that I'm going to run and grab Okafor, that the Nets have suddenly figured out how to use him and they're going to run him this many minutes every game. If Hollis Jefferson is back in the next one, I think Jahlil moves back and plays in a limited minute role, as he has pretty much every single game that he has played since arriving in Brooklyn. As for Stauskas, well, he's a guy that's out of the rotation when both Russell and LeVert are playing, so nothing to really get too excited about when looking at Nick Stauskas' performance there in that one. For the Utah Jazz, we still don't have Rocket Rodney Hood. He's still out with that leg injury. Hopefully he is back soon. But Ravishing Rick Rubio has looked much more impressive in that time. And while he was really borderline as to whether you hold him or whether you keep him, and I still don't believe he's going to be putting together some really strong second half run during this season, the numbers he's putting up at the moment with Hood out, and he seems to be more finding his groove now. It keeps him as a guy to hold. It doesn't mean that he's becoming a top 40 guy or anything along those lines, but it does mean that his value can remain as a 12-team league guy, and we've seen that from him in these last couple. The Washington Wizards. Markieff Morris, over 30 minutes in the last 2 games. Not a trend that I expected to happen, and he's been really good in those 2 games, so maybe Brooks was riding him as he was playing well. While he's not a must-own guy, you can absolutely grab him if you want in a 12-team league guy and just see where this goes, but I imagine if he just isn't quite as hot as what he's been in his shooting, then his minutes will go back towards the 25 rather than the above 30 that it has been in those last two games. But he is an option if he is on the waiver wire. Maybe you just want to see exactly where this goes for him and the Wizards. For the Warriors, there's just nothing to really talk about in terms of adds or changes in value, except that Steph Curry remains absolutely ridiculous. He dropped in 49 points against the Celtics in a fantastic game across the weekend, but yeah, what else can you say? Look, he is, somehow Steph is still underrated in some circles. He has been brilliant since returning from his ankle injury, and he's just super fun to watch, and that's really all there is to say about that. The Trey Burke Knicks situation continues to exude weirdness. He played only 18 minutes in that last game, but it all came pretty much at the expense of Frankie Ntilikina, who played only 9 minutes. Like, when you're a team that's not in the playoff hunt and you've got a lottery point guard, why wouldn't you bring in a recycled 4'8" point guard in the guise of Trey Burke to cut into those minutes? Or if you're going to bring in Trey Burke, why do you keep playing 45-year-old Jarrett Jack? If Burke's really playing this well, start Burke. Bring Ntilikina off the bench and piss off Jarrett Jack. There's just absolutely no need for Frank to be losing developmental playing time. And I'm not even saying to start Frank, even though I think that you should, or at least explore how Frank and Kristaps Porzingis are going to work together. But Jeff Hornacek doesn't seem to agree with that. His rotational decisions and his lineup decisions make no sense. He claims to have data saying that, you know, Frankie's working better in these other lineups, but every available data says the complete opposite of that. So I don't really know what he's getting at. I don't know what he's talking about. And now, yeah, limiting Ntilikina's playing time so that Trey Burke can come in, a mid-season signing, and you've got Jarrett Jack as that other guy. It's just absolute nonsense. Now, Burke is a guy that you can look at maybe in 16-teamers. I added him in a 14-team deeper format today and sort of went with that just to see what they do with him. But I'm not looking to add him in 12-team leagues, despite that really hot microwave scoring performance he had across the weekend. Yusuf Nurkic continues to be infuriating. His good and his bad are just so far apart. You do have to still hold him, but this has always been the concern with Nurk. Injuries, mental lapses, and form fluctuations is what really limits him. It's what made him a risky pick at the start of the draft. He could have been a guy that was a top 25 guy, or he could have been a guy who's around 100, which is sort of where he is at the moment, and he's gone, you know, definitely towards the negative end of that spectrum. I still have my concerns, but he still, I think, should be owned in most formats. For the Orlando Magic, Mario Hezonja again outplayed John Simmons. I don't think they're going to continually give Hezonja more minutes than Simmons, but it's what I would like, and it's what I think a lot of Magic fans would enjoy seeing. Maybe there's quite a few Magic fans who are Simmons fans also. I'm not 100% sure of that. I don't think Simmons is a 12-team league guy. We saw Bismack Biyombo also be limited, and we saw Kem Birch continuing to get his 15 to 17 minutes a night as that primary backup big, even if Mo Spates does come off the bench first. He comes off, plays limited minutes, and then Birch gets in there and is a deeper league sort of guy. And don't look at him as, in a lot of the standard comparison is, oh, is he the second coming of Whiteside? I'm not 100% sure that's the case. But in deeper leagues, I feel pretty good about Birch's role, at least until Nikola Vucevic comes back, and hopefully then he takes on that Spates role and Spates is eliminated from the rotation completely. It would be interesting to see what they do with Biyombo versus Birch. I'm 99% sure that it'll be Biyombo who gets the bulk of those backup minutes behind Vucevic when he returns. But for now, yeah, Kem is providing some nice value, but I'm not really valuing him as this awesome long-term dynasty-type center given his age, and the likelihood of that happening is it's pretty low, in my opinion. Let's go monstrous line of the night, and that is Paulie George of the Oklahoma City Thunder. 31 points for Georgie with 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 triples, 4 steals, and 9 of 17 from the field for George, 9 of 11 from the line. We thought there was a concern that he was going to drop right off playing next to Russell Westbrook. He was the 16th ranked player last year. He is the 16th ranked player this season. Yeah, he's averaging 2.5 points fewer this year, but he's hitting more threes. He's getting more steals as he's able to focus more defensively, and he's putting up 0.6 blocks, which is double the amount that he put up last year. And that might not seem like much, but 0.6 blocks is basically average in a standard league. So going from a guy who's below average to a guy that's average does actually help his numbers come up. He's weirdly, much like a lot of the Thunder guys, excluding Steven Adams, saw his free throw percentage drop significantly from 90% to 81. And while he's still a positive, yeah, moving from that huge, huge positive he was last year to just a marginal one is an issue. But Over the last few games, he has upped that. He has gone to 84% over the last 2 weeks, so some improvement there. But I feel pretty strongly that Georgie's going to remain a top 20 guy for the remainder of this season. He had 20s in points, he had nice 2 steals, 6 boards, 3 assists, those sort of numbers. And that early season field goal percentage issue, which was a real bad one, has definitely corrected. And he's shooting 48% over the last month, and he's got his season total up to 44% from the field after really, really struggling to begin this year, and for large chunks of this year, shooting his three-pointers at a higher percentage than he was shooting his two-pointers. The waiver wire line of the night is also the young gun of the night, and that is Fred VanVleet of the Toronto Raptors. Freddles had 25-2-4 with 3 triples and 2 steals, and did it on really hot shooting, 9 of 13 from the field, and hit all 4 of his free throws. Again, he remains a really highly ranked player over the last 2 weeks. He's the 61st ranked player, but as I've said when we talked about him last week, I think it was, it's on the back of extraordinarily hot shooting, 56% from 3 over those last 5 games. In fact, over the last month, he's at 52% numbers, which we know have to come down. He's also at 50% from the field in those last 5 games, which gives him 12.5 points and almost 2 threes per game. And that weird block game that he had with 3 blocks has boosted his block average, and he's at a steal per game. So many things in his statistical profile over that last 2 weeks that's making him a top 65 player are things that aren't going to be able to sustain. The block rate, the scoring, the 3-point percentage, the field goal percentage, none of that is going to be able to remain. Now, we know he's going to stick at an 18 to 20 minute role. We know that, but that more gives him a 16 team league value as a 3-point streamer who can get a steal and 3 assists. And that's nothing to sneeze at, but it's also not going to maintain a top 100 value. Very few players can be top 60 players in 17 minutes per game, just showing you how unsustainable what VanVleet's performance or recent performance is. That will dip. The shooting will dip. There's almost zero doubt about that. And those defensive numbers should come down a little bit also. He is putting up some really big numbers, especially in that steal category. And that is bound to reduce based on what we've seen from him as a historic play. And he had those 3 blocks. They're the only 3 blocks he has had in the last month, and that has really pumped up his number. That was that weird game, which was just 2 games ago, in fact, on the 24th of January, he had 3 blocks. The previous time that he had a block before that was the 23rd of December. So that just shows how far and away those numbers are. And as I said with Paul George, you get 0.6 blocks per game, which is how it's broken down for him over the last 5. That puts you at average in that category. Whereas if he didn't have that explosion, he would be at 0 blocks in that time. And that would knock him 20, maybe 30 spots down in the rankings along with the percentages. So there's some interesting stuff there, but it's nothing where I go, you know what? Yeah, this is going to continue and this is going to keep happening. And you're going to have some value there for your fantasy leagues. I tell a man's not hot. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, was not hot. 7 points with 4 rebounds, a steal, 3 of 9 from the field, and only 1 of 2 from the free throw line. This is sort of what I was talking about all preseason, all start of the season, that he wasn't going to be able to continue this level of efficiency. And guess what? He can't. He is barely inside the top 100 for the season, the 99th ranked player. But over the last month, he's 178th because his field goal percentage has dipped from that crazy number we were seeing to begin the season. He is at 41% over that time, 33% from 3, and 53% from the free throw line. So negative impact in all percentage categories. And if you've got 3-point percentage in your league, he is really, really stuffing you around in that area. And again, one of the things I talked about, it's going to be hard for him to maintain value when all he's doing is scoring on high efficiency. He had limited rebounds, limited assists, steals and blocks, not great. Now, over the last month, it's been all right. 2.3 assists, that's not too bad. It's more than you expect from him. 0.7 steals, 0.7 blocks, and 4 rebounds. But with those percentages coming down, his scoring dips and his 3-pointers have dipped. And this is a more realistic expectation for Kuzma, not that 50%, 54% shooting that we were seeing from him pretty much every game to begin the year. He has tailed off in quite a large way. His minutes have come down as a result. And again, this is more of a realistic expectation for a rookie drafted with pick 27 in the NBA draft. So don't look at it as necessarily a temporary blip. It might be, but also consider, you know what, maybe this is just the sort of guy that he is, a player that averages 14 and 4 with half a steal, half a block on 43%. Maybe that's who he is, rather than 18-6 on 50%, which is what he was doing to begin the season. Maybe this is a more realistic expectation for what Kuzma is going to provide for the rest of the year. Now, I still believe he has to be owned in all leagues, but that could very easily change if this sort of poor performance continues up until the All-Star break. It's time for question time, and didn't have many people submit questions today, but went with one from, who was it from? From Matthew Dean, who's on Twitter, at Matthew S.E. Dean, and his question is one that I'm sure many people want me to talk about. He says, any advice for the DeMarcus Cousins owners now scouring the waiver wire for a replacement? And that's me. I owned Cousins in, I think, 4 or 5 of my 8 redraft leagues, so in tons of them, and in all the ones where I was playing well. So I was sitting, I think, 3rd in one league where I had to drop him, 2nd in another league where I had to drop him, high up in all those leagues where I had him, mainly because I was able to get Cousins at a pretty significant discount in those leagues, and he was killing it. I picked him 7th in my points league, and I was 2nd in that one. Yeah, really, really going strong with Boog. And now, of course, if you haven't heard, which I'm sure you have, he has torn his Achilles, and he is out for the season. I've seen DeMarcus Cousins be moved in multiple of my dynasty leagues as people are worried about the recovery for an Achilles for a big man at his age. And we've seen guys return from their Achilles injuries. Rudy Gay came back pretty quickly. Wes Matthews came back. Yeah, Brandon Jennings came back. But not one of those players came back at the same level as they were before. Wes Matthews is sort of starting to. But we forget that in Portland, when he was playing before that Achilles, he was a top 60, top 50 fantasy guy. Now he struggles to be a top 100 guy. So we can say he came back, and look at him, he came back, he's playing his minutes. He is not the same guy. He's not that same. Rudy Gay came back, not the same guy. Brandon Jennings, he's playing in China, I believe, coming back from his Kobe, tore his Achilles, not the same guy. Elton Brand, not the same guy. Chauncey Billups ended his career. Very, very rarely do we see, and I know all the Australians listening to this will tell me, Jerry Roughhead tore his Achilles and he came back and he was fine, and that is absolutely true. Roughhead is a big man in Australian football. He's probably the size of Russell Westbrook, maybe, in terms of NBA sizes. So we're not talking a large, large unit like, or maybe he's taller than Russ. Maybe he's like a Lonzo Ball height. I think that's probably a more accurate representation of where Jared Roughhead sits height-wise. But he's not Boogie. He's not Boogie's size. So at Boogie's age as well, we're talking about a 27, 28-year-old who's not going to be ready to start next season. The dynasty value of him is interesting. I do not think that he will be able to ever have top 10 value again. I think that there's a case to be made that he could be, maybe not next season, maybe the year after, he could have a top 30, top 25 season, but I would not be anticipating Boogie to return to this same level of production we're seeing now. He still might come back and be very, very good, but I don't think he's going to come back to this level. So if you are in a win now mode in a dynasty, you might have to, and it's happened in all the people who have Boogie are in win now mode, and they've traded him away just to get pieces who can help them contribute now, because he's not going to be there to start next year, almost for sure. And if he will, he'll be limited to begin the year, and limited minutes, have restrictions, and probably will be rusty to begin the season. So that's all that talk on him. But what do you do to replace it? Well, you can't. You can't replace Boogie, but what you do need to do is you need to be extra vigilant on the waiver wire. You need to really start cranking up the streaming now. You're using your max acquisitions each week to try and at least approximate what Cousins was doing. There's not one player out there who's going to provide that for you. Dante Cunningham, who moves into the starting lineup, he gives you zeros. Omar Asik gets minutes. Rajon Rondo, Etuan Moore. All these guys are fine adds in your lens, but they're not giving you anywhere near an approximation of Boogie's numbers. It just isn't going to happen that way. So you're going to have to go out there and stream Greg Monroe when Alex Len sits. Add Tyson Chandler for some numbers. Go and look at Larry Nance for some defensive stats. Like, it's going to be streaming, and it might be looking at your team and going, all right, where are my strengths and weaknesses now? Do I need to make other trades to acquire some depth? Do I trade a top 20 guy for 2 top 40 guys? That might be an option for you. And normally in 2-for-1 deals, I'm all about getting the one, but it depends on what's happening on your waiver wire. You then need to replace someone off the wire, you might need to do that 2-for-1 to try and give yourself that extra value, because that might actually help you replace those numbers. You might have to pivot your strategy. You might not have to, but in a lot of cases, you might have to pivot your punt build, which is a possibility, but it's not 100% easy. But most of the time, it's going to come through streaming those categories in, streaming in your acquisitions and working out where things and taking flyers. Hey, maybe this is going to happen and seeing if that pays off and see if you can get a top 70 guy on a flyer type of spot. But working the wire quickly, working it aggressively, working it smartly and trying to get yourself an extra three or four more games per week just by smart free agent decisions to try and make up for that loss of Cousins. It's going to be almost impossible, but maybe you can squeak through. Maybe you can take on people in the playoffs who then suffer an injury of their own that can even the playing field somewhat, but you can't replace guys like Cousins. That's why I very rarely would say ever trade away a top 10 guy, because unless you're getting a top 10 guy back, just because their production is just so much better than everyone else's that it's really, really tough to do. So you know, have a look at what's on your wire. You're not going to be able to do it. You're not going to be able to replace it. You know, Greggy Munro is an interesting one out there.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
But we also haven't seen what's going to happen with Munro with both Chandler and Len healthy. He's played in the last four games, but in each of those games, we've either had one or both of Chandler and Len out. So it's unlikely that he was necessarily in the rotation, but he'd be a guy to grab just to see what happens. And a lot of people speculate, do they go and sign Terrence Jones? Terrence Jones is not good. I know Matt Smith loves him. I don't think he's a very good player at all. He can put up fantasy stats, but Gentry will look at him and go, this guy's terrible. He's got no idea what he's doing. He forgets assignments. He can't play defense. And yeah, if he played 28 a night, we'd all be salivating over his fantasy value. He just cannot stay on the court long enough to do that. Solomon Hill may come back from his hamstring issue, but he is not a high value fantasy guy. He might be able to sneak into top 150 numbers once he finally returns from his hamstring, but it's definitely not going to be the savior of your team. There's just no one that's really going to appear at this point. Trade deadline might be your best option if really an opportunity opens up for someone in a big way, but for now, you're just sort of hedging your bet. So thank you for the question, Dean. I'm sure it's on everyone's mind. Many people who listen to this podcast would have been all over Boogie as I was, and now are suffering through that loss, which is most likely going to be fairly fatal to your overall value in your fantasy leagues. All right, let's get into these games now and cover them in that little bit of extra detail as we do through this box score breakdown portion of the show. The first game we look at is the Phoenix Suns and the Houston Rockets. Devin Booker started again at point guard, which was an interesting development over the weekend. But late in the game, he hurt his ribs, and it seems unlikely he will play on Monday. At this point, we don't have any official word. He's going to get evaluated on Monday. The Suns don't have a shoot around, so we won't hear any info early in the morning. But it looks like that Devin could miss Monday's game. Now, he was great, 31-3-10. Him running the point is definitely more beneficial for him fantasy-wise and for this team, with Tyler Ulis and Isaiah Cannon being terrible. Interesting in this one, Ulis went from starting point guard to playing only 2 minutes, and Isaiah Cannon got those backup minutes, 24 of them, 12 points with a rebound and an assist. Of course, if Booker does miss on Monday, you could stream in Cannon, you could stream in Ulis, but we've seen through the season how little value that they do have. At this point, you're probably leaning towards Cannon, but I think I'd be looking more at guys like Josh Jackson, maybe a Troy Daniels, who likely play more minutes and take on a larger shot creation responsibility here with the ability to go for 20 with 5 or 6 triples in there. As for Daniels, he did start here, only played 16 minutes, 3 and 2 with a triple, nothing too exciting. And he is not an exciting ad if Booker is healthy. TJ Warren had 24 and 5, a triple one. He struggled last time when Booker was out, so keep that in mind. Doesn't make him an automatic must-play DFS guy, because when that extra defensive attention comes his way, he did struggle. Well, Marquise Chris had 3 fouls in 3 minutes, and that limited him to 16, 2 and 5 with 2 steals and a block. So still racked up the numbers, and I've said this plenty of times, he's like Terrence Jones. He is a guy that puts up fantasy stats when he plays. There's no denying that, but can he actually stay on the court from foul trouble or from not being shithouse? Before his hip issue, he was starting to play much better. So if you did add him, I would still hold here and see what happens, but he has been far from inspiring since he returned from that injury. 30 minutes for Tyson Chandler because Alex Len was out, and then Greggy Munro got ejected.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
11 and 15 for Tyson, and that could be an interesting streaming target for those DeMarcus Cousins owners. To get some rebounds, maybe Tyson could be that guy, while Munro had 8 and 2 with 2 steals in his 16 minutes. Not much else really happening with the Suns. Josh Jackson was terrible, 0 of 13 for 2 points in his 22 minutes, but He is starting to come along, but not really a 12-team league guy yet. Jimmy Harden for the Rockets, 27, 10, and 8 with 2 steals, a block, and 3 triples. Great numbers there. Well, Chris Paul only played 27 minutes, and after the game, he said he's fine. He said that his absence in the fourth quarter was pre-planned. Don't really know why they pre-planned that, but that's what they said. So he's going to be fine. But a guy who won't be fine is Trevor Ariza, who lasted 36 seconds before straining his hamstring. He's unlikely to play on Tuesday in the Rockets' next game, and that would open up minutes for Luke Marmute and Gerald Green. Green re-entered the rotation. He had 8 points with 2 triples in 18 minutes, but to me, he is not a must-grab 12-team league guy and probably not a 14-teamer. He'd be a streamer for points and threes in 14 to 16s, and that's about it. While Marmute actually hitting some shots at a decent level, 13 points with 2 triples, 2 steals, 1 block, and in those couple of games that Ariza was suspended, Marmute scored 14 in each of those games. So he could be an interesting 12-team stream. Probably more of a 14-teamer, though. Clint Capella, 10 and 11 in his 24 minutes. Well, Ryan Anderson at least played more in this one, but had 13 points with 2 threes. And Eric Gordon, really poor with the percentages. Got to the line 8 times, just couldn't hit them. 13, 5, and 2. Still a guy to own, even though his production is on the decline. The next game we look at, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Chicago Bulls. The Bucks breaking out their City Edition jerseys. Giannis, 27, 9, and 8 in 35 minutes with a steal and a block. Good to see the minutes come down and the substitution patterns differing a little bit for Giannis. Tom Haberstroh had a great article today talking about DeMarcus Cousins' injury and how fatigue likely played a large part in that. And this is why I am on these guys and why uninformed people come back and be, oh man, these guys are athletes. They can play through anything. They can play 48 minutes a game. Yeah, that's fine until something happens that's a result of wear and tear from playing large, long stints. And these coaches need to be held accountable for this stuff. And maybe that's one of the reasons Kidd got fired for just playing Giannis, you know, 18 minutes straight and just dumb crap like that. And Giannis dealing with a sore knee already. Stuff that really can come back to really bite a franchise in the ass, as we're seeing with Cousins at the moment. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. With Brogo out, Tone Snell started, played 28 minutes and had 6 points again. Remains a terrible fantasy player, while Sterling Brown, fresh off being tased, played 28 himself, 12 and 6, 2 threes, 2 steals. I really like Sterling Brown as a player. Haven't done enough research into his criminal activity or alleged criminal activity that got him tased, so I'm going to withhold shipbloke judgment on him there. But I do like what he can produce fantasy-wise, if Brogdon remains out. I think he should play over Tone Snell. I don't think that's going to happen, but he is a guy that I like longer-term for your deeper dynasties. The Muppet, John Henson, his role's a little bit more consistent with Kidd gone. 12-3-3, 2 steals and a block, and I think he should be owned. Well, Bledsoe struggled with the shot, but racked up the other numbers. 8 boards, 6 assists, and 2 steals for him. Chrissy Middleton, 27-5, another strong game for him. For the Bulls, Denzel the Hammer Valentine, 18, 5, and 4 in 30 minutes with 2 triples. That is 2 big games in a row for the Hammer. His numbers were trending down with Zach LaVine back, but they've come back up with a vengeance in the last 2 as David Nwaba has seen his playing time limited. I've been on the Denzel Valentine bandwagon for 2 years, just saying, I just want to see them try and see what they've got. There's no point playing guys like Justin Holiday or the crap that the Isaiah Cannon that they were running out there last season. Let's see what Valentine can do. He's going to have his ups and downs. Probably more downs than ups. He does struggle a lot, but when his shot is going, he can contribute in multiple categories. Not saying he's a 12-team league guy, because I don't think that he is. But in a 16-teamer, I would add him in a 14-teamer. Let's see what happens. But eventually, LaVine is at 27 minutes a game now. Let's see what happens when he goes to 32 or 33. Does it come off Holiday? Does it come off Denzel? Does it come off Nwaba completely? Does it come off Jaren Grant? There are a few options. So Denzel definitely keeping his name in the discussions. As for Holiday, 12 points all from 3 with 3 assists and 3 steals is enough. But still, jacking shots at a high level and then not hitting them is not a way to endear yourself to anybody. Still has some value in 12s. Lauri Markkanen, 17 and 10 in his 33, while Mirotic played 28. And we saw a lot more Markkanen-Mirotic front courts, with Robin Lopez only getting 20 minutes and Punchbob Shiploke only 13 minutes. So a lot more of that combination, which is what we want to see. It elevates Mirotic's value, it elevates Markkanen's value, and really is the best option for the Bulls a lot of the time. Yeah, you'll need Robin Lopez out there at times, but I like seeing that Markkanen-Mirotic combination and seeing what Hoiberg can do with it. Jerron Grant played 32. He had 15, 4, and 5. As long as Chrissy Dunn is out, Grant has back-end standard league value, and that's it. Well, Levine, just brutal again. 2 of 11 for 6 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 steals. His defense is still a concern. The shooting is a real, real big concern. And this is part of the issue that I had with him heading into the season. How would he go on a higher usage with higher, with more defensive attention thrown his way? Will the efficiency become a problem? And you know, this is a pretty common thing when you return from an ACL, is that your shooting numbers dip quite a lot. He still, of course, needs to be owned and will be better than this. But it's a rough little patch at the moment for Zaki. On to the Clippers and the Pelicans. Blake Griffin, 27, 12, and 7. A big game from him. But let's talk about Ty the List Manager Wallace. He'd been playing big minutes in pretty much every game, but hadn't really come through with the huge statistical game. But here it was, 19, 6, and 6 with a steal. He is a real player. He's a real issue defensively with his length. But with Juwan Evans out, the Rooster Danilo Gallinari out, CJ Williams out, and Austin Rivers out, there's a lot of minutes to go to players in that wing rotation that eventually is going to cut into Wallace's minutes. Now, I think that he should be playing exclusively over CJ Williams, so that's not a problem. But when Gallinari, who should be back next game, and Austin Rivers return, where are the minutes going to be for Ty? It's going to be tough for him to see over 20 in that scenario. So while he's fine now for your 14-teamers, that could drop off pretty quick. Lou had 22, 4, and 6, while Milosh had 12, 4, and 6. And that's your back-end point guard standard league value for Teo Dosic there. While Wesley Johnson, only the 8 points on poor shooting, but brings the defense every single game. 2 steals and a block again. But much like Wallace, once we get the Rooster back, once we get Rivers back, how is he going to be able to maintain 31 a night? The answer to that question is he probably won't. On to the Pelicans, and let's have a look how they did go without Boog Cousins. Well, Tone Davis played 41 minutes in the game. They lost by 9 points. Alvin Gentry copped a bit of shit for that, and his excuse was dumbfounding to me. He played 41 minutes, and they got beaten by 9, and they said, you know, they asked him the question. He got annoyed at criticism, and he said part of his reason was, you know, we needed to win the game, whatever. But the other part is the part that's just infuriating. Oh, Anthony didn't tell me he was tired. Like, that's not how it works. Like, these players aren't going to come to you and go, "Coach, I'm tired." It's just not going to happen. They're going to want to play as much as possible. They're not going to, the worst judge of someone being, you know, fatigued or having a slight 5% dip in what they're doing output-wise, balance-wise, is going to be that player. Even though they're most in tune with their body, they're just going to say, "I'm a warrior. I've got to push through it," all that sort of stuff. So if you're basing your rotation decisions not on medical science, on a player's feel, then you're going to run into problems. And maybe is that a contributing factor to the Cousins injury? Well, that's what Haberstroh seems to think. And if Gentry's sub pattern or rotation pattern in a game where you're losing by 9 is Tone didn't tell me he was tired, that's a bit of an issue to me. So we'll see how that pans out for Davis. Let's hope that these continual big minutes don't play an issue, because he's going to have, you know, big, he's already been having big numbers, but 25, 17, and 6 was massive here. But that specter looms. And Drew Holiday, 37. He had 29 and 7, a steal, 3 blocks, and a triple. And Drew has been absolutely immense this year. He struggled inexplicably last season once Cousins arrived. Could not hit a single shot. And thought, was this going to be an ongoing pattern this year? Turns out, no. He is having one of the best years of his career, averaging almost 19 points with 4.5 boards and shooting a ridiculous 50% from the field. And that's only with 33% shooting from 3. He is a guy that could be a 35 or 36% shooter, and that would push him at over 50% from the field. The assist numbers, I think, are going to bounce a little bit back up as well, because one of the things we don't realize with Cousins is just how much ball handling he did, how many assists that he did have. So that's going to give an opportunity for Drew to see his rebounds jump, his assists jump, his usage jump. Might be a bit of a hit in efficiency during that, but some interesting things happening with him. The other guys we want to pay attention to, of course, is Etuan Moore, who played 32 minutes. I know Matt Smith's big on him. He's going to have an article talking about Etuan's value today. He's owned in only 45% of leagues, so he's available. He's definitely someone to go and grab. He had 18-2-1 in this game, and his numbers without Anthony Davis early in the season were really good, but we shouldn't expect 64% shooting, which is what we got from Moore in this one. He is a highly efficient shooter. He's not that good of a shooter, and he doesn't contribute anything really in rebounds and assists. He can get steals, but don't expect this level of scoring at this level of efficiency. It's one of those things that just isn't able to continue, but he does absolutely have some value. Darius Miller could be used as a three-point streamer, probably more a 14-team league guy. And Rondo had 6-5-3 with 2 triples. Shot the ball horribly. I'm going to talk about him later on in the player spotlight. He's still someone I think you should go and grab in 12-team leagues, but this was far from a ringing endorsement of what Rondo can do with Cousins out. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do in that next game. Dante Cunningham started 28 minutes, 8-7. That's your 16-team league sort of value. While Omar Asik played over Cech Diallo. I like Diallo. Elvin doesn't. And Elvin wins in this case because Asik's playing. Also, awesome. Why would you play DeAndre Liggins? Just get this guy out of here. 5 points in 16 minutes. I don't know why he is just thieving minutes on every team he goes to. There is just, it is a weird, weird scenario that he continues to get excessive playing time that does not work for me at all. The Lakers and the Raptors. I talked about Kuzma's struggle. So Larry Nance played 25. He had 15-8 with 2 steals. High field goal percentage, good steals and blocks guy, decent rebounder. He has value in 12-team leagues. His upside is capped by the presence of Randle, Lopez, and Kuzma, of course. And if one of those guys was to be moved, which I don't think will happen, Nance's value would go up. But for now, he is a guy that can produce value with a limited upside. As for Randle, 17-10-5 in only 25 minutes, while Brookie Lopez, only the 17-8-2. I don't see anything changing for him. Ingram had 14-6-4, horribly inefficient, and I am losing a lot of hope for Ingram as a player who's ever going to figure it out. But hard to write guys off only in their second season. Third season was a lot of guys start to really start to get going, but he has had ample opportunity, lots of minutes, lots of games, and it's always the same sort of shit with him. Alex Caruso, 11-4-5 with a 1-1 in 18 minutes. Big numbers for him, while Tyler Ennis had 3-2 in 19 minutes. But with the way Caruso played, that limited Jordy Clarkson to only 22. He had 17 points, but he'd been crushing it, like playing 30, 32, 33 minutes a night and putting up big numbers. These are the sort of numbers and playing time we saw from him when Lonzo was out the first time. And when Ball returns, Clarkson's value is going to find it, or he's going to find it impossible to replicate it. Onto the Raptors, Serge, only 24 minutes for Ibaka due to foul trouble, 11-9 with 3 blocks, while Valanciunas and Poeltl, they split the center minutes evenly. 24 to Jonas, he had 13-10, while Poeltl played 24 and had 6-6. Valanciunas, again, the teasing for this guy is just phenomenal. Give us 28, give us 29, we know how high he would go, but it's just never going to happen. For now, we just hold and enjoy this low-level production. 19 points for DeMar DeRozan with 7 assists, while the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
He had 5 points in his 22 with a steal and a block. The blocks are starting to come. It's one of the things that was missing from his game earlier in the season, and it's one of the reasons I really did like him dynasty-wise. And if they start to come with more regularity, then he does have top 100 potential in his future. Probably won't get there this season. I think that's a fair statement. Lowry had 14-11 in his 27 minutes. The next game, the Detroit Pistons and the Cleveland Cavaliers. No Avery Bradley, so we had Reggie Bullock start, and a second strong game for Bullock. 14-5-4 with 4 triples, 50% shooting. I don't love him as a must-own 12-team league guy, but again, you're looking for options to stream in. With Cousins gone, maybe Reggie can be that guy, especially if Avery has to miss any more time. They did make another change to the starting point guard. We had Langston Galloway start the previous two. He went out of the rotation entirely. Ish Smith started, and Dwight Bikes came back as the backup. Ish had 7-4-5, while Bikes had 8-4-3, and you know, restoring the status quo for a team that's just trying to figure out how to get a win. Tone Tolliver started. They moved Toby Harris down to the 3 with Bradley out. 20 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 triples for Tone. One of the best 3-point streamers out there, but the other numbers there, especially the 5 assists, don't count on that happening too often. While Stan Johnson had 14-4-3, 2 steals, a block, a triple. Really, they're the sort of numbers that Kyle McEwen has been masturbating over with Stan Johnson for quite a while. Shout out to you, Kyle, if you're listening. And he looked really good doing it, has looked solid. I'm not ready to go and grab him in a 12-team league, but Avery Bradley's struggling. Reggie Bullock's not a key piece of the future here with this team. So maybe Stan can really start to establish himself or establish himself in a 28, 30-minute bench role and run that stuff in that second unit. And that would give him, you know, maybe 14-team and back-end 12-team league value. Toby Harris had a leg issue, but he was able to return to the game 20 points for Tobe there. Well, Lucky Kennard, who Stan says is going to play 25 minutes a night, played 19. He had 2 and 4. I really like Kennard. It wasn't a great shooting night for him, but he's not a 12-team league guy just at this point. On to the Cavs.
LeBron James.
He played 38 minutes, had 25, 8, and 14, so a good return to form. And Kevin Love only played 27 minutes, much to my annoyance, but at least he took 14 shots, the second most on the team. He had been averaging 8 shots per game in January prior to this, 20 and 11 with 4 triples. It turns out that he is actually the Cavs' second best player and should be their second option on offense. So we'll see if Ty Lue sticks with it. I don't have massive confidence in it, but we will see. Tristan Thompson started once more, 9 and 4. I had so many questions. Man, Tristan Thompson starting, do I grab him? In 10-team leagues, in 12-team leagues? The answer is no. No, you don't. You don't grab him in 10-team leagues. You don't grab him in 12-team leagues. Maybe if you're just really, really desperate for double-doubles, he might give you one every 2 weeks. Maybe. But he is, and like games like this, he started, only played 20 minutes. Nothing to see outside of deeper leagues for Tristan. Well, Jay Crowder, of course, we're not owning him in 12s. He had 12 points in his 26 minutes. Well, the plumber, J.R. Smith, that's 11 triples in the last two games. 15 points with 4 threes in this one after 7 threes in the last one. Sure, 3-point streamer. We can add JR in that case. That's it. Not looking to think, oh, he's turned it around. Based on these two games, based on the insertion of Tristan Thompson, I'm not really feeling that from him. But the 3-point stream value is there. Derrick Rose had 2 points in 9 minutes. Shout out to everyone telling me he should start over Isaiah Thomas. 14, 2, and 7 in 27 minutes for Thomas. Still definitely not anywhere near his best, and he's not going to get to last year's level. We can fairly safely rule that out, which was pretty much a guarantee to begin the season. He hasn't been as good as I thought he would be, but he will get there, and we'll see. It's going to be, I say it all the time for lots of players, but his free agency is going to be super informative, and who's giving him the max? No, anyone? No one? I don't see it. I honestly don't think he's approaching anywhere near $30 million next season. It's going to be really, really intriguing to see how that all goes down. The next game, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Joel Embiid on the first night of a back-to-back played 36 minutes and had 27 and 10 with 3 threes and 2 blocks. Continues to be awesome. And the great news is he has been cleared to play the back-to-back on Monday. They were going to see how he pulled up after this game, so they'll check on him Monday morning. But as of this stage, he is going to play in the back-to-back for the first time in his NBA career, which is great for him, great for the Sixers, great for the NBA. And there are many people who are listening to this podcast that would never have believed that this would happen. And people have fatalistic attitudes about many different things. Like when, you know, I talked about Embiid, you know, being off minutes restrictions, man, he'll never be off minutes restrictions. He's always going to be limited. We saw that go away in about 3 weeks into the regular season. When he said a month ago that by the end of January, I'll be off my back-to-back restriction, many people didn't believe it. But here we are, everything actually on schedule and on time with Embiid. Let's just hope that playing through this and playing these big minutes isn't going to be detrimental to him, but it's obviously a huge, huge step that he is able to do this, and he has been clearly awesome. Dario Saric battled foul troubles, only 21 minutes, had 16 points on. His shooting has been out of control. I still don't feel that it's totally realistic. Of course, 86 true shooting in this game is unrealistic, and at some point there's going to be a dip. But another strong game, while Benny Simmons had 22, 4, and 7. Justin Anderson's had 2 consecutive decent games, 9 and 5, 2 steals and a block. But of course, it's with JJ Redick, Markel Fultz, and Jared Bayless all out of action. And in this one, with Saric in foul trouble. I like Anderson. He can get you steals and blocks as a wing player. He can score, he can hit threes. But he is not on the right team to really find the room or the role to develop. If for some reason he moves on and gets traded at some point, I'd have a lot of interest in his dynasty value. But for now, we're seeing it. But once all those guys are back, he gets limited. Luau Cabarro started once again, 33 minutes with 6 points and 2 triples. Added 5 assists, which is one of those things that was part of his game in Europe. And I thought, oh, maybe he can be this wing facilitator. Of course, on this team, that's unlikely to happen all that often. But he showed a little bit of it in today's game. Bob Cove had 11 with 3 triples there, while Timothy John McConnell just the 10 points in 16 minutes. Onto the Thunder, Westbrook 37, 9, and 14. Free throws, again, just a real pain in the ass. Huge attempts, 73% doesn't get it done, but big counting stats. While Steve-O Adams, 20-13, he's been an absolute stud this season, someone who was quite unexpected to take as big a leap as he had, but he has been awesome. While Mallow had 16-2. Post-game, Bill Donovan said that we want to explore playing Mallow at the 3 and Jeremy Grant at the 4 with Robertson out a little bit. He wants to explore that a little bit more, so that's something to pay attention to if you are looking for defensive stats as streaming. Jezza Grant can provide that. He didn't have any in this game. He had 11 points in 22 minutes. Terry Ferguson started, played 23, while Josh Eustace played 19, and there is no clear winner from that Andre Robertson season-ending injury. Ferguson, Abrines, who barely played, Jeremy Grant, Eustace, none of these guys are going to sniff 12-team league value consistently. They're more still your 16-team league sort of guys. The last game of the night, the Sacramento Kings and the San Antonio Spurs. Garrett Temple out with an ankle problem, apparently. Malachi Richardson out with an ankle injury. We already had Will Cauley-Stein out for this game and for the next game with a bone bruise. And then Scal Labissiere sat out with a shoulder problem. So we had another mucked up starting front court, starting lineup. Costa Kufos and Zach Randolph started, and both guys played over 30 minutes. And interestingly, very early on into this game, Dave Yeager suffered some lightheadedness and wasn't able to coach the game. But whoever the replacement coach was decided that even with Labissiere out, even with Willie Cauley-Stein out, that we will give exactly 0 minutes on a rebuilding youth-focused development team, 0 minutes to Yorgios Papagiannis. Just shitful development, shitful coaching. They gave 8 minutes to Jakar Sampson, and I understand that you have to give minutes to Kufos, you have to give minutes to Randolph in this spot, but giving Papagiannis 0 minutes is, it's horrendous decision-making. Vince Carter played 27 minutes as we developed the youth. 27 for him, 21-6 with 5 triples, a steal and a block. Really, really good stuff from Vince, but of course he's not going to play every game, so we can't rely upon that. While Georgie Hill had 19 with 3 triples, 4 assists in 26, but got some extra playing time with the absence of Garrett Temple there. Bogdan Bogdanovic, it was a terrible night. 3 points with a triple one, while Budrick Hield was worse. Just the 20 minutes for Budrick, 0 of 5 from the field, and inexplicably he replaced De'Aaron Fox down the stretch where it makes no sense. Fox is better than him, Fox plays a different position than him, and Fox was playing better in this game, so just confusing coaching all around. Foxy hit all 6 of his triples, don't expect that to happen, but 26 points with 3 assists and a block. He is a must-own guy. This is an unexpected sort of performance, especially when you look at it. If he doesn't hit his shots at that level, and we're talking about maybe 17 points with 0 rebounds and 0 steals, doesn't look quite as sexy as what this sort of performance does. But still, of course, a must-own guy. Justin Jackson also was okay, but I'll only be looking at him as the deeper format guy, 14-5-2, and his minutes will be jerked around. Speaking of jerked around, the Spurs benched Dan Green, Pau Gasol and Kyle Anderson after halftime. Green did not play at all in the second half. Pau and Kyle both got in, and they started Bertans, Bryn Forbes, and Darren Hilliard over them to begin that second half. That meant Forbes played 28 minutes and had 23 points with 5 triples. He is a chucker. He takes a lot of shots. He will hit them occasionally. He won't at other times. Don't get suckered into that line. But do get suckered into DeJounte Murray, who had 14-10-6 in 26 minutes. Of course, he hit all 6 of his shots, which is unrealistic, but the rebounds and the assists, they're things that he can continue, so make sure he is owned. Manu returned and played 25 minutes, a lot for him, 15-4-3. He can actually be a streaming target in standard leagues, which you might not think for Manu. He can have that value. But overall, you know, don't get worked up by seeing 9 minutes for Dan Green or 21 minutes for Kyle Anderson. Occasionally you'll get this stuff from Popovich. It doesn't mean that it's going to stick. In fact, it almost assuredly means it won't stick moving forward. And this just occasionally happens. Anderson's still a guy for 12 teamers. Green, a fringe guy in that sort of a spot. And Pau, you know, he still maintains his value. Still had 14-11 in this game, despite the weirdness that was the rotations. All right, that wraps it up for all the action from Sunday. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to look at the games for Monday. And then we're going to shine that player spotlight on Rajon Rondo of the New Orleans Pelicans. Today's song is going to be by Big School, and it's called Centennial. And then we'll be back to talk some DFS.
Go, go.
guys, we're back. Let's go straight into the player spotlight. And today's player spotlight is Rajon Rondo of the New Orleans Pelicans. You know, he is one of my favorites, someone I've gone into battle against plenty of times on the old Twitter.com. And he's a topical guy because of the injury to DeMarcus Cousins. We saw that when Anthony Davis was out earlier this season, Rondo was able to put up much bigger numbers. His minutes per game increased and all his other stats increased. So we thought that might be a possibility for Rajon here playing without Boog Cousins. Well, he did see more minutes. His previous three games, he'd been at 15, 15, and 17. Today, he played 23. It wasn't though as though he played well, though. 6, 5, and 3 on horrendous 2 of 11 shooting. What can we expect from him moving forward? Now, I've done a couple of calculations via NBA Wowie on some of the stats that Rondo put up. When he was playing with Cousins, this is before today's game, he had an assist rate of 13 assists per 100 possessions. He attempted 12.9 field goal attempts, and he averaged 0.7 FanDuel points per minute, which is a good estimation, I guess, of overall production. When Cousins was off the court, when he played without Cousins, he had an assist rate of 20.8. That's 7.8 extra assists per 100 possessions. He took an extra 0.6 field goal attempts, and his FanDuel points per minute went up from 0.87 to 1.34. That is an absolutely massive rise. But then I went and looked at it a little bit differently and said, well, what about when Boogie was off the court and when it was just Rondo and Davis on together? Well, when that happened, his assist rate remained at 20.8, which again is 7.8 assists per 100 possessions higher than what it was playing with Boog. His field goal attempts actually went down in that scenario, and that's not a bad thing for Rondo's overall value because he's not an elite scorer. But the other thing that did happen is his FanDuel points per minute went up. 0.87 to 1.15. So much more productive sharing the court with Davis versus sharing the court with Cousins. When he had to play with Holiday, Cousins and Davis together, we saw everything be minimized. When Davis went out and he moved into that third option, the minutes went up and the production went up. And that's sort of what I'm anticipating a bit here. Now, I don't like Rondo. I don't like him as a player anymore. He used to be like my second favorite player back in the day before his ACL when he was actually good. But things change. The NBA changes, the style of play changes, and what you need from players changes. And Rondo's hasn't been able to keep up with that, not necessarily through any fault of his own, just the way his game is. He has got a significantly negative box score plus minus this year. In fact, it's the worst of his career, a negative 2.5. And of course, the team is much, much worse with him on the court versus when he's on the bench. The last time a team was positive with him on the court was 2011-12 when he was a plus 5.6. Since then, he's been negative 3.3, negative 6.5, negative 1.3, negative 4.4. And this year, he's a negative 10.7. And you can say there's all different factors associated with on-off. But when you've been a negative for the last 6 seasons, the chances are that you're a negative player. And that's pretty much what Rondo is at this point. But we're not necessarily looking at plus minus when we're talking about fantasy. It's something that could have an impact as to how much Gentry plays him. But if he can get on the court and stay on the court, then the assist numbers, as I detailed earlier, they should start to rise. But today's game was a little bit of a dampener on that because we played more Drew Holiday at point guard. We saw more minutes for Ian Clark. We saw DeAndre Liggins getting in there and taking some of Rondo's minutes. So for now, he's a guy to add, you know, temporarily and seeing what happens in standard leagues. But if he goes and plays, you know, 21 a night or 22 a night and doesn't push to 26, then it's going to be almost impossible to hold him. I do think that his per 36 assist rate will rise. We know his field goal percentage is an issue, and his free throws, even though he doesn't get to the line, yeah, that can be a problem. But we're looking at him for assists, we're looking at him for some steals, and for some out-of-position rebounds. But it's just going to come down to minutes and that assist rate, which should increase without Boogie around. So they are things to consider. Now, if we look at Rondo long-term, I hate him long-term. He's 32 years of age. He's been declining for years and years and years. He possibly won't be in the NBA next season. I'd say there's a 50% chance he doesn't play for any NBA team at all next season because he isn't very good at what he does anymore. You can say he led the league in assists in Sacramento, and that is a true statement. It doesn't mean that he was a good player. It doesn't mean that he was a positive player. It doesn't mean anything because he was hunting those assists. He was padding his stats. You can use whatever reason you want. Yeah, contract years, as people throw out all the time. He's been on a contract year, I think, for the last 4 seasons, still yet to have a good year in that time. So if he manages to string together a string of good games now, that's fine. But don't think of it as some sort of indicator of what's going to happen with Rajon as we move forward into the rest of his career, if there is actually any rest of his career left in the NBA. And again, I think it's a 50% maybe greater chance that he doesn't play for any team at all next season, just given the struggles. And if he can't establish himself at 26 minutes per night with Cousins out, it's almost certain that he won't be playing in the NBA next year. That would be my guess. At the age of 32, with all his deficiencies, defensive issues, yes, shooting issues, scoring issues. And again, this is an opportunity for him to do that. I am holding my breath. I would add him as a speculative thing based on all those numbers we've seen and the way things have broken down when one of those big three guys has been out. But there's a probably greater than 50% chance that it doesn't happen and that he remains in a 20-minute role and Ian Clark and DeAndre Liggins and these guys, each one more, Darius Miller, start to get really large bumps in their playing time as opposed to Rajon Rondo. So it's worth a punt because it could work out and you could find yourself 8 assists per game off the waiver wire, 1.5 steals, 6 rebounds. Like that, you could do that. Chances are you don't. But there is a possibility that that happens, and that's what we're having a look at. That's what the stats tell us, and that's what past history with Gentry told us. But today, lower minutes, let's see how it all pans out for Rondo, but I'm not feeling super positive for him at this point. The perfect DFS lineup on FanDuel. Freddie VanVleet, 39.4. Russell Westbrook, 73.8. Uncle Alex Caruso at 28.3, Bryn Forbes at 29.6, LeBron James at 55.6, Paulie George 51.8, Tone Tolliver 31.1, Larry Nance at 33.6, and Steve-O Adams at 35.6 for a total of 378.8, and that cost $59,400. Over on DraftKings, Van Vliet had 39, Forbesy had 32.25, Vince Carter had 31.75, Tone Tolliver 33.75, Embiid had 47.5, Westbrook had 74.75, Paulie George 51, and DeJounte Murray 37, and that was a total of 347 points for 49,900, and for both of those, that's the main slate, so the last four games, not the early-only slate. Let's have a look at Monday. There are six games on the docket for us. The first game we will take a look at is the Charlotte Hornets and the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are favored by 3 and the total is 215. We've got TJ Leaf and Michael Carter-Williams, both questionable. That will have absolutely zero impact on DFS. Miles Turner is back for the Pacers. He played 11 minutes in that first game off the bench and accumulated 5 fouls. I would expect that he pushes back into the 20-minute zone in this one, assuming he doesn't get into foul trouble, but may not start, so don't really be relying upon him too heavily. At point guard, we've got Dazza Collison, 5,500. He's been really cranking out the solid lines lately, 34-point average over the last five, and in fact, his lowest score in those games has been 23 points. With Turner back, maybe that reduces Collison's usage a little bit, but I think he's an okay cash option here, whereas Corey Joseph at 43, just not someone that gets me excited for DFS at all. Kemba's at 8,500, and while I like what Kemba has done, averaging almost 45 in his last five contests, the Pacers have been a notoriously tough team for point guards to play against, and Kemba is one of those guys who has struggled playing against them in the past, averaging only 28 points over his past three outings against Indiana. 8,500 is more a GPP guy, but I don't feel good about it for cash. At shooting guard, I like Nick Batum at 5,500. There is definitely value there. He has done well against the Pacers in the past. He's averaging 30 over his last five, which if he gives you that here, I think you should feel okay about. While Oladipo at 9,300, probably a little bit too high. Again, it's a limited slate, so you could consider using him, assuming you've got enough cheap options around him, but I'm not 100% in love with Oladipo here. Jezza Lamb at 42 is not really doing it for me. At small forward, Kid Gilchrist is at 4,900. Yeah, nothing there. Boyan's at 42, nothing there also. And then you got Lance Stephenson, who dropped 40 in the last game. A little bit of a fluky performance from Stephenson. He's at 5,200. There's nothing that's getting me overly excited against his former team here. 5,200 tournament, maybe. Again, not feeling super strong about it. At power forward, Marv Williams at 45. I think there's some cash value there. Struggled in his last outing, but I feel okay about using Marvin Williams here. Frank Kaminsky, nothing to see. Well, Thaddeus Young at 6,500. That is too high, with the spectre of Miles bumping his minutes up, and that limits what Thad can do a little bit. While Sabonis at 65, also a tough guy to use with Turner's, usage uncertain. Miles is at 5,500. Again, only played 11 minutes due to returning from injury and fouls, but at 5,500, if he comes in and plays 34 minutes, then I'm all about it. There's definite tournament value there. I'm not about using him for cash, but if they say Miles is starting and there's no minutes restriction, I'd consider that. That's a cheap price for Turner. We know he's struggled at times, but his last game before that injury was a pretty decent performance. I think he had 37 points in that one. So he would be someone to consider at 5,500. Well, Dwight Howard has been killing it, but therefore his price is out of control. 10,100 for Dwight. His lowest score in his last five, though, 45.5 points. So I don't hate using Dwight. He is on an absolute roll. Turner and Sabonis aren't really going to be, they're not overly equipped to be able to stop him. So he does have some value here in this one, I believe. On to DraftKings. I like Howard a lot, 9,100, that's strong. Victor Oladipo at 93 is worth a look, and Kemba at 8,000 is in a much better spot than he is on FanDuel. While Kid Gilchrist at 42, I think he enters your tournament pool, but probably as a last resort, while Marvin Williams at 42 has some cash value. The same sort of stuff with Sabonis and Thad Young. I could use Thad over Sabonis, that'd probably be about it. Daz Collison at 62 is a little bit too expensive, while Miles Turner's at 58, again, more of a tournament option that we could consider, especially if we hear that he is starting. The next game, the Timberwolves and the Hawks. Jim Butler is back. The Wolves are favored by 6. The total is 215 points here. At point guard, Dennis Schroeder, 7,300. Recently, his production has been way off. I'm okay to get back on him here. We've seen him wax and wane throughout his career. I think a big game is just around the corner for Schroeder, so I'm back on board. While Jeff Teague at 6,100.
My name is Jeff.
He was battling some ankle issues in the last game, so split the minutes with Tyus Jones and was putrid. But this is a perfect situation. He plays against his former team, but it's more the ease at which point guards can score against the Hawks that I'm interested in. At 6,100, I think he is worth looking at in cash games. Tyus Jones and Malcolm Delaney, hard to get behind them. A shooting guard, Kent Bazemore, was just terrible in the last game. 2 points in 18 minutes. He's at $5,500. Had been relatively okay before that previous game, but the matchup here against Wiggins or Butler, depending on how they want to run things, at $5,500 for Bays, I think that you have to consider that tournament only, but still worth it. And then your other shooting guard, you've got Wigo at $6,500. He's been putting together about 30 a game, which is not bad. It's not quite where it needs to be. I still think more a tournament guy, while Jamal Crawford and Marco Bellinelli not doing it. At small forward, Jim Butler, $9,400. Totally fine. Great matchup for him. Great player. 50-point upside. Comfortably. Love that. While the artist, formerly known as Taurean Prince, looked a little bit better in the last game. 19 points. He's at $4,800. Bad matchup, but I think going at him in a tournament, I think the ownership will be low. He is worth having a squiz at. At power forward, the Baptist, John Collins, is at $5,000. He only had 18 points in the last one, but I do like the tournament value here. While Taj at 58, I think, is a strong cash play. He'll just give you what he needs to. Ilyasova, Gorgui Dieng, nothing interesting there. At center, Miles Plumlee, Mike Muscala, Dwayne Dedman. Really hard to use any of those guys given the unpredictability of Budenholzer's rotation. While Carl Anthony Towns at 9,800, fantastic matchup for a fantastic player. This should feel like 50 points. It feels like 50 points to me, so I think Towns is absolutely worth the go in cash and in tournaments. On DraftKings, we have got Schroeder, Jeff Teague, Wiggins, and Bazemore all as tournament options. Schroeder's at 7-2, Teague at 6-1, Wiggins 6-5, and Bazemore 5-1. Very similar to one FanDuel there. I like the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. Even for cash at 4,700, I think there's something there. While Townsie at 9-6 and Butler at 9-4, especially Towns, they both have that cash appeal. The Baptist at 4,900, again, more a tournament guy. But there are some other options on DraftKings that I wouldn't be using him necessarily in my number one lineup. Let's go on to the next game. We're going to talk about the Phoenix Suns and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Suns on a back-to-back. The status of Devin Booker remains unknown, which of course is a big concern. Jim Ennis, Chandler Parsons, Jermichael Green have all been ruled out for Memphis, while Tyreke Evans and Deontay Davis are both questionable. It looks like Tyreke is leaning towards playing as well, so that's good news there. At point guard, Mario Chalmers at 3,600. He's averaging 30 over the last three and 26 over the last five. Of course, the value dips there if Tyreke plays, but if Tyreke is out, love that for 36, especially against a really good matchup against the Suns. I think you could consider him even if Tyreke is in action. Andy Harrison at 42, very little upside there, while Isaiah Cannon at 37. Cannon can be a guy that if Booker is out, I would put into a GPP if Devin isn't ready to go. At shooting guard, Wayne Seldon's at 3,500, minimum salary guy, has really shit the bed in the last couple of games. I think he's worth a tournament look, but that's about it. Well, Booker at 8,000. If he plays, I like Booker at 8,000. It seems like he won't, so therefore you won't be using him. Tyreke's at 8,200. I'd probably fade that. Even though the matchup's good, I'd fade it in cash, but I would consider it as a tournament guy. While Troy Daniels at 36 would be a great GPP player if Devin Booker is out. At small forward, Joshy Jackson's at 4,600. He is the tournament guy that's worth looking at if Booker sits also. While TJ Warren at 66. I think you should consider Warren a cash guy if Booker plays. If Booker is out, we've seen him struggle a bit, but that price is not... It's not going to exclude him, so I think you should still use him at that sort of a price tag. Dylan Brooks at 43, no. Power forward, Ivan Raab at minimum salary, averaging 15 across the last three. If Deontay Davis is out, I can see using Raab as a GPP guy, but not feeling strongly about it. Whereas Jarrell Martin at 5,200, I think that's okay for cash with Jermichael ruled out and a really good matchup for Jarrell. I feel pretty strongly about using him. At center, Tyson Chandler, Alex Len, Greggy Monroe. Well, we don't know what Monroe is going to do. It is a back-to-back. Will Chandler play in this one? I think you could probably feel pretty good about putting Greg into a GPP. With the expectation that either one or two of Chandler or Len sit out, and that's going to give him obviously significant upside. But we don't know that for sure at this point. That is a big possibility, but we're not certain at this stage. So that is something to pay some attention to with Greggy Monroe. Right there. So keep an eye on it. And if Len is out, then it really does open things up for Monroe quite a lot. So I do like him as a tournament guy. Who else are we looking at in this game? Where are we? I completely lost my screen there. Okay. Power forwards. Oh, yeah, I've talked about them, haven't I? Marquese Chriss at 5,200, just been absolutely terrible at the moment. Centers, Marc Gasol, 7,900. Love the matchup for Gasol, so I'm in on using him, whereas those Suns centers, again, tough to be concrete at this point. On DraftKings, Gasol at 8,500, I think he's in a pretty good spot, while Joshy Jackson at 48. But otherwise, this game, it doesn't look quite as appealing as what it does on FanDuel. You can use Mario Chalmers, but his price is up at 4,700. Tyreke at 82 and Devin Booker at 87 are probably too high given their respective situations, while Jarrell Martin at 48 and TJ Warren at 64, I think, are some decently strong options there. Let's move on to the next one. We've got the 76ers and the Milwaukee Bucks. No spread there because I guess they're waiting to see whether Embiid actually does play in the second half of a back-to-back. It is looking that way at the moment. The other one we need to pay attention to is Malcolm Brogdon, who missed today's game with that calf injury, and Jared Bayless is likely to return after missing the last couple. At point guard, Bledsoe's at $7,000. I like using Eric here. He struggled a little bit in today's game, but still had 31 points. The shot wasn't there. I'm in on using him here. Markel Fultz, I don't think he's going to play. Jared Bayless, not interested in him. At shooting guard, Brogo's at 5,600. Well, if he is in, I am in on that at that salary, but we need to know that he's ready to go. Well, Chrissy Middleton at 7,500. I think that's more of a tournament look for Middleton. Maybe you'd lean towards cash if Brogdon was out, but that's probably about it. And of course, Sterling Brown at minimum salary. If Brogo is out, then I think Sterling does become an option. Even in cash, he had 27 points today. He could become that option. They're definitely over Tone Snell anyway. Yanni is at 11,600. I feel good about using him as a high-priced option on this slate. Bob Cobb at 63 is not working for me. At power forward, Benny Simmons, 8,500. Yep, I feel all right about that. The numbers have been strong for Simo lately, averaging 41 over his last three, while the Muppet John Henson at 55. Really strong cash numbers, not great for tournaments, but strong for cash. While Dario Saric at 6,700, that's too high for me. At centre, Thon McCur, minimum salary, not interested here, while Embiid at 9.7. I think if you're going to use Embiid, it has to be in tournaments, because it might be a back-to-back, but they could also limit him, maybe play him 27 or 28, just to be cautious. So that is the concern that you do have with Embiid, if he does actually play at all. Over on DraftKings, I like Yanni at 11,000 a lot. Simmons at 89, not quite as good, but still something. And 6,900 for Bledsoe is a cash option. The Muppet at 5,200 is really strong. I think that's good for cash, but again, pretty limited in its tournament upside. The next game we're going to take a look at, we've got the Miami Heat and the Dallas Mavericks. The Heat are favored by 1.5 and a low total of 197 points. JJ Barea and Devin Harris are both questionable. The absences of both of those guys open things up for Kyle Collinsworth, for Maxi Kleber, and for Yogi Ferrell. Ferrell minutes probably stay the same regardless, but it could give you an option to use Maxi Kleber, who put up some big defensive numbers in that last game. Barea is at 4,400. He has been really, really poor lately. Not interested here. While Goran Dragic at 6,800. A perfect matchup. This is looking at 35-ish type numbers for Dragic, I think. So I really like using him here. Ferrell at 44 is a tournament guy. While Dennis Smith at 64. Point guards against the Heat is never a great spot. Smith has been good, but at that price, I think that he is in fade spot. 51 for Tyler Johnson, I also like as a positive for cash. The Duke Wayne Ellington at shooting guard, 4,500. I like that. He's playing lots of minutes. He's getting lots of shots. I think there's some cash value there in him. While Wes Matthews at 5,000, I actually think it's not a bad spot to use him, especially if you're just looking for a cheap cash guy to get a guy like Giannis or Simmons or Embiid into your lineups. At small forward, the pencil Harrison Barnes, I hate it at 6,600. I feel like there's zero upside. It's a bad matchup. No interest. Well, Joshy Richardson at 6'5", I would take him over the pencil at those same salaries, but that's probably just a little bit too high for me to feel super confident. Justice Winslow, don't really get too excited, but at 4,300, he had 28 in the last game, which is obviously enough. I just don't really feel super good about it. At power forward, Dirk is at 4,800. Nothing to see there. Dwight Powell, nothing. Kelly Olynyk, Jim Johnson at 53. I think James Johnson at 53 is worth a tournament look, but that's really about it. And for centers, Hassan Whiteside's at 7,900. Played only 18 minutes in the last game. Let's see how he goes trying to get out to guard Dirk and to deal with Kleber. I don't love it. It is a good matchup, so maybe in a tournament you could throw Whiteside in there and hope they play him 30 minutes, but the signs point towards no. Bam at 4,000. Well, if they give Bam more of those minutes to get out there onto those switches, then at $4,000, then he could very easily take advantage of the positive matchup, so he would become a tournament option for you. On DraftKings, we've got, I think Barnes at 6,100 is much better on DraftKings. I like that. Dennis Smith at 6,000 is also more in play. And then you've got Adebayo, Whiteside, and Wes Matthews as your tournament options. Bam's at 38, which is really, really good. And Whiteside at 77 again. We're still looking at it as a tournament because we don't have faith in the minutes given the way that Eric Spoelstra has been using him this season. The last game of the night, the Celtics and the Nuggets. Denver's favored by 1.5. The total is 204.5. We know Marcus Smart is out. Jamal Murray, the Blue Arrow, he should be back starting after being benched for disciplinary reasons in that last game. So he should be back starting there. Terry Rozier at 4,700 with Smart out. I feel like he is a decent bet to at least bring that value back for cash. So I think he's all right there to use in a cash game. Well, the Blue Arrow at 65. Can easily go for 50, but could also go for 20. So that's more tournament style. Kyrie's at 9,000. The matchup's really good for Kyrie, but I just think a lot of your upside is taken away and the floor's a little bit risky. So he's probably a fade given the FanDuel pricing. At shooting guard, Gaz Harris at 71.
Nice, Gary!
I like it. I'm not sure there's huge upside, but I feel pretty good about his floor here. He's been fantastic. While Farton Will Barton at 6,300, probably more of a tournament guy than a cash player. At small forward, Baby Necks at 43, Wilson Chandler, no. Torrey Craig, Semi Ojeleye, and Jaylen Brown, not interested really in any of those guys. At power forward, Jason Tatum has been really struggling, averaging 20 over his last five. He's at 5,400. I don't really feel super good about using him. He's not a high usage guy, so that limits his upside. So I think he'd be a fade. While Marcus Morris at 47, he is the opposite of low usage, and that would be high usage. And at 4,700, he could very comfortably bring you back 28. I don't love Marcus, but I do think that he is a good tournament play here. Trey Lyles at 6,100. With Mason Plumlee starting, I don't feel overly confident in getting him involved. Horford's at 71. I love that for Al in this matchup. While Nikola Jokic at 9,700. Probably a little bit too expensive for Yoke on FanDuel. The Celtics have been quite good against opposition centers. Less so recently, but quite good over the course of the year. At 9,700, I think he's worth a tournament look, but that's probably about it. While Mason Plumlee at 5,500, playing really well lately, and I don't hate that for cash. His ability to block shots, get assists, get rebounds, and score a bit has really helped his DFS numbers recently. On DraftKings, Jokic at 86, Irving at 88, Gaz Harris at 61, which is fantastic, and Farton Wilbarton at 57. I think there's a lot of cash value in them. Same with Mason Plumlee at 48, while Rozier at 47 is a little bit expensive, but I do think he's got 32, 33 point upside here, which would put him into the tournament bracket. Let's have a look at a couple of other sites before we go. On Yahoo, for tournaments, we're looking at Jarrell Martin, Dirk Nowitzki, the Baptist, Bam Adebayo. They're the tournament exclusive type guys. And for tournaments and cash, Winslow, Dylan Brooks, Bojan Bogdanovic, Marvin Williams, Josh Jackson, Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier, Mason Plumlee, Marc Gasol, Schroeder, Ben Simmons, Dwight Howard, Jim Butler, and Nikola Jokic. And on Moneyball for tournaments, Jokic, Simmons, TJ Warren, Kent Bazemore, Jaylen Brown, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, Joshie Jackson, Wayne Seldon, Ivan Rabb, and Bam Adebayo. And for cash, we've got Chalmers, Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier, Mason Plumlee, Jarrell Martin, Jason Tatum, Taj Gibson, Goran Dragic, Al Horford, Gaz Harris, Marc Gasol, Dennis Schroeder, Dwight Howard, Jim Butler, Karl Anthony Towns, and Yanni Antetokounmpo. All right, that wraps it up for today's podcast, guys. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. And if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. You can also find the show on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube, where you can go and give it a thumbs up, give it a subscription, and leave a comment below. Check out basketballmonster.com also. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Chandler Parsons.